We have been looking at the Gospel, or not the Gospel of John, 1 John, because God told me to. Not in an audible voice, but I was all set to do the book of James. I've got great notes on James, preached it 14 years ago, and when I was typing, out came the words 1 John. I didn't even have anything prepared last fall when I was thinking about what to do. And yet, in the midst of everything going on in the world, it's been like God's gift to me. Because John, they talk about him, he obviously was like Jesus' best friend. He's the only one of the 12 disciples that lived to be an old man. All the rest of them were killed for their faith, for proclaiming Jesus was the Messiah. Imagine everything he saw from early in the first century to the end of the first century. The birth of the church, the killing of Jesus. He's the only one of the disciples mentioned that was at the foot of the cross. He's the one that Jesus, from his torture instrument, says, "Take care of mom. I think she's having a hard time with this." And is gonna for a long time. Can you imagine? John, tradition says, was with Mary, and they went to Ephesus, which was one of the largest cities of the ancient world. And it would be like going to a Vegas or a New York City or to a LA in terms of our country. And John got exiled to this island of Patmos, which is where prisoners were. It was a desert island in the Aegean Sea. And he realized there was more to write. He saw some of the things that were creeping into the church. And one of the things, his main messages, is about love. And here we are, feeling like our country's getting like pulled apart like taffy on Mackinac Island in such a way that it is causing me some angst. Julie Boyd, my next door neighbor, said in 17 years as a professional licensed counselor, I've never seen the climate of people's stress and anxiety and fear and anger as bad as it is now. And she confirmed, I had simply shared, she said, "How are you?" I said, "Fine, but I'm dealing with kind of a low-grade sadness." I don't know if you, that was the best words I could come up with, because it wasn't like anything's really wrong, but something's really wrong. And I have trust in God, and yet I'm still plagued by this underlying thing. And interesting, Julie said something that Marty Fletcher has said. Dr. Marty Fletcher, psychologist, good friend, met him 4 years ago after the play Crazy for You. And we started talking and struck up a conversation that's lasted for 4 years. And he said a major part of who he is treating are people dealing with fear and anxiety and anger. And here we have this verse, and I'm going to share a couple of the verses. Marty, come on up. We're going to have kind of a dialogue sermon. And here's how the verses start out, and then we're going to jump in. If we could have the first slide there. In John chapter, 1 John 4:16, "So we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in him." Imagine if you were living your life fully relying and fully knowing on the love God has for us. What could that look like in the face of whatever it is that you're facing? Man, I'm fired up.
Yeah?
How does any of this tie in? One of the things that Marty said early on in our conversation as he jumped into Scripture was, he said he was constantly being blown away by how much Scripture simply backed up and even went deeper than the science of psychology.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Want to say something about that? Yeah. Hi, everyone. About 1 in 5 people, like 18% of Americans, have an anxiety disorder. That doesn't mean that we all need a little bit. Like, I need a little bit of anxiety right now just to, you know, stay organized and have enough energy for this. I'm talking about fear, where it gets to be a problem in their lives and they suffer and maybe also interferes with their daily functioning. So what I want to do is first let's find out what it is anyway. You know, because so many people have things going on in their bodies and have no idea what it is, so they can't get any control over it. Okay, does that be a good place to start?
That's a great place.
Okay, so first of all, where are our feelings? How do we know we're having a feeling? I'm going to ask you questions, not because I'm quizzing you, because I want you to think, okay? Because I could just give you information, and that's just information. But I ask people that. I say, how do you know that you're having one? Where is it?
I feel them in my heart.
Uh-huh.
I think they're in my mind. Anybody else agree with me? Your emotions, where are your emotions?
You know what most people say? They say, I don't know, in my mind, in my brain. But we don't have any nerve endings for pain in our brain. They do a brain surgery and you're awake. As soon as you get it numb and get in there, you can cut a piece out if you want. They won't feel it. Okay? Well, that's gross, but
don't
sorry
try
about
it.
That. I'll do better. So anyway, you know, we can feel if who's seen Inside Out, the movie Inside Out? Okay, that's a good movie, right? Because it actually shows us through these characters the really there are six feelings that neuropsychologists say that we can have, but you know they did five. They left out surprise. Okay, so we can feel joy. Now, joy is one of five in that movie. That's 20%. That's all we get. Well, you know, if we divide it evenly in a distribution, right? So we can't just live for joy, but it's sure nice to have when we can have it, right? Mm-hmm. And then we can feel fear and anger, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then disgust. You know, disgust is, right? Disgust is like the milk is bad, but I don't know it, so I open it, and it's a quick response to this is bad. Don't have to think about it. It's a quick response. This is bad. Get away from it. Throw it out. And then what I leave out?
Sadness.
Sadness. Okay, now you said something about sadness, and I want to talk about sadness because when people are afraid, sometimes it's because they don't want to feel something sad. And I'm going to tell you something about sadness. Sadness is an attachment emotion. You know what I mean by that? To the degree that we want something and attach to it, like it could be an idea, it could be a person, and then we run the risk of losing that, don't we? Because everything's going to go away, right? We're going to lose everything. Even that's why we get nostalgic when we watch. Like I'll see my son when he was three. He's 18 now. He's 6'3", and nothing like that anymore. And I feel something. I feel something. That attachment. It feels a little bit like sadness. It's a very gentle emotion. Sad is a gentle emotion. We don't have to be afraid of sad, but there's always risk in attaching because we got to feel that loss, right? So how that relates to fear is a lot of time when people have all these past hurts and griefs, what an emotion wants to complete itself. Is this like a lecture? Is this too much like a lecture?
No.
Is this too much like a lecture? I like this stuff, and I hope it helps you, so I'm talking about it, and
I'll
steer
jump
me
in.
Away. Yeah, thank you. But here's what sad wants to do. It wants to climb, right? And you start to feel it's almost like a sneeze, right? And if we don't shut it off, it's going to complete itself. And how is it going to complete itself?
We fall apart.
Yeah, we cry. And then how does that feel when we're done? It soothes us, right? That's one thing it does. We have these painkillers that God gave us in our bodies. So if we will cry, that's the first thing we do. Well, we breathe, and then we cry when we're born, right? We're supposed to be doing this, but people don't want to do that, partially, I think, because it is an attachment emotion. And guess what? Somebody might not come. And if the babies in the orphanages, guess what? They don't cry. Why do they not cry? Because nobody came. Nobody comes, right? And then we learn to do that through our lives. And then, because the other thing that sadness does is it brings people over to us, right? You're having a hard time. And my instinct, even when I do it, is to come over and say, hey, man, it's all right. Because I felt that before, too, right? So sad is gentle. I want you to know that. Because what we shut it off with is what? You hurt me. How dare you, right? Mm-hmm. Anger or fear. Mm-hmm. Like that person's dangerous. I'm going to get away. Fear and anger, they're not attachment emotions, are they?
Right.
They're there for something else, aren't they? Anger's there to, well, they're both there when there's a threat, right? We need those, right? Thank God we have them, because mm-hmm. there are some threats sometimes. How often? When's the last time that have you really been a real threat? I'm talking like I can see it, so I can run from it. I can do something about that. Mm-hmm. Here it comes. I'm going to run from it. Mm-hmm. Dog's going to, I got to climb a tree. I can get away from that, and then it's gone. Whew, done. That lasted a few seconds.
That is so different, I think, than what I've been feeling. If I confront fear or the anger, the detachment kind of emotions. Because most of mine are like, because I'm reading stuff on the internet or on Facebook or seeing it in the news. And it, are you saying that those fears or anxieties are or aren't legitimate?
Well, here's what I'm saying, because I don't, because people are really protective over their, you know, fears, you know, because it makes them feel like they can do something about it. We're only supposed to be afraid or angry for maybe seconds, long enough to run from it or neutralize that threat. Because if it's a real threat, if it's something I can do nothing about, guess what? Our feelings are where?
In our bodies.
In our body. That's a physiological event. The reason I know I'm having it is because there are hormones and electrical impulses. So something's really happening there. If I perceive a threat that isn't there, then I can't do anything about it. And guess what? I'm on a constant tension. And people get sick because anxiety and depression, those are stress-related illnesses, right? When we're under, our bodies like a little bit of stress. Do you believe me? Yeah, because of what exercise, that's stressful, right? And then afterwards we feel calm. Our bodies even feel good after they get really, really cold, like ice-cold showers. Who does those? Come on. Don't knock it till you
not
try
me.
You've played outside for a long time as a kid, not want to come in. And then when you came in, took your wet clothes off, put your jammies on, and got some hot cocoa, you felt really calm and peaceful, right? Mm-hmm. We like a little bit of stress. Matter of fact, if we don't get enough stress, we get stressed. and that's what a sedentary lifestyle is, right? If we sit too much and with too many bags of chips for too long, our body starts to complain. Starts to get sick, starts to show signs of stress.
I want to look at the next two verses that John writes. He says, in this way, love is made complete among us. That just like calls out to me, to be complete in love. That's what I want. For me, it's what I want for everybody here. In this way, love is made complete among us so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. Ooh. Because in this world, we are like him. There is no fear in love. So does that mean our emotions are clashing? But perfect love drives out fear. Because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. Okay, doctor. What's going on? Is that just denial, is saying, oh, I'm not fearful?
Okay, I like to think in terms of can I observe it? So some moments, am I loving all the time, like 100% of the time? No, I can't. I mean, I wouldn't pretend that. So I like to say, can there be fear in the moment when love is present? What is fear? What kind of an emotion is that?
Detachment.
There's a threat. Now, who loves threats, right? I can't be loving in a moment where I'm feeling threatened. This is where the gospel is, I think, psychologically correct, right? It fits perfectly, dovetails with what I learned in psychology. Goes further, though, because it has wisdom, and in psychology, it doesn't try for wisdom. It just that's not the objective. It's to reduce symptoms and help people out. Okay, steer me back because I just went way off in the weeds in my mind.
Well, you were saying fear is a detachment emotion. Let me go get a couch. Fear is a detachment emotion.
For me?
There's already enough people who fall asleep during my sermons. It's okay. They don't need couches. Fear, there is no fear in love. You're saying fear is a detachment emotion, so obviously you're implying love.
I perceive a threat. Now, look, we live in, I think, the greatest country ever. I mean, if it has its problems. But we've never seen anything like this, right? We don't have many real threats. And I'm not going to, some people are suffering a lot right now. There's no question we're suffering. So I'm not going to minimize that at all. But I'm seeing the kind of threat where I say, I can smell it, like, smoke, we better run, it might be a fire. Or I can hear it, like, an ambulance, is it coming here? Somebody in trouble? I can feel it like it's a pain that's unfamiliar, like I better go to ER, this isn't right, kind of pain, right? Taste it, like spit it out because it's a threat, poison or ruined, right? All those feelings. How many do we have? And you'll know because you'll be able to perceive it with your senses. you'll know if it's a real threat, because then you can do something about it and extinguish the threat. I can run from it, I can hit it. So many threats are in our minds. So many threats are in our minds. We'll read something. Where am I? I don't control much. Really, I mean, I don't. I certainly can't control another person. Can anybody here control anybody else? I can't control my kids.
I mean,
I can like physically maybe force them to do something, but what good is that? That's not what I wanted. I want them to do right and see right. I can't do that, right?
God throughout Scripture says practice self-control.
Fruit of the Spirit.
It doesn't say practice other control. Anywhere.
Did Jesus control anybody? I haven't seen Jesus like he could have, definitely, but didn't control anyone. What he did is he demonstrated the path. He showed mercy and forgiveness to everyone, offered it to them, right? The only thing I can do is imperfectly follow the path. That's where the peace comes from. That's when I start giving up control. Doesn't mean I'm not concerned. We hate to see people suffer, but that's what you're feeling. When I see people suffering, I feel what you feel. Mm. I feel like, man, but that's an attachment emotion. That means, you know, we have brothers and sisters who are, being hurt or hurting. That's just sad. But when I start getting mad and I start getting scared about maybe a news story or something, I don't know, because I can't do anything about that. I do know one thing. If I want to have this, like, soup of bad stress hormones in my blood, and if that's going to help me in this life, in this area, then that's what I get.
Wow. So how do you psychologically explain perfect love drives out fear?
I don't think that we can love that thing that we perceive as a threat. What we can do is this, though, and this is where the path was demonstrated. If I fully admit, we all have a dark side, right? I don't want to look at any one person. We all have a dark side. We've done bad things. We've thought bad thoughts. We have been ashamed of what we've done. We just have to, but he says, yeah, you do. That's what he told us. Yeah, you do. You know, you're imperfect. If we can embrace that, then anything that we criticize someone else for, we probably have either done it to somebody else, done something like it, you know, maybe not taken it that far, maybe we took it further at times, I don't know. Or we thought about doing it, right? No? I'll admit it, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. When we can admit that...
We need to talk a little about denial here.
Well,
no, don't get sidetracked. Perfect love drives
hard,
out
right.
fear.
Then we can forgive that perceived threat, right? Because we make him or her human, like us. And to the degree that we accept forgiveness, we can forgive to that degree. And that is a psychological truth that Jesus Christ said.
Say that again.
I don't know what
to
I just said.
Degree.
Let me try. Fact check.
To the degree that we...
Accept forgiveness, because look, we're already forgiven if we're sincere about it, and we sincerely say and feel the humility of saying, yeah, you know, I'm not what I thought I was. I do screw up. I did screw up that time, and humble ourselves and ask for that forgiveness and accept it, though, which means what's the opposite of forgiveness? I've thought about this a lot. What do you think? What's the opposite of forgiveness, do you think? It's a verb, right?
I was going to say insanity.
Yeah, that's okay.
Resent.
But what do we want? When we forgive, we want something. We want to restore our
revenge,
relationship.
Revenge, justice.
It's revenge, right? It's not enough to just feel that resentmental thing, that resentment. It's not enough to just feel it. We want something, don't we? We want that person to hurt. At least, you know, I don't know, you know, it can get into the where, admit it. I want you to, but we want something when we want them to admit it, don't we? We want them to feel something.
And when you're in that phase, admit it, even if you just want them to acknowledge it, even if they don't tell you they're sorry about it.
We're
reliving it.
We're reliving it. And now it's different to want to restore the relationship. It's a different thing to want vengeance and punishment. Right? So how is there love in that? That's fear and anger. Do you know how close fear and anger are in the body? Think about it. What happens when we're super afraid? What happens to our breathing? Because I'm ramping up, right? Getting some adrenaline going, right? What happens to our muscles? Mm-hmm. You'll ball your fist. If you really start thinking of a resentment, you might just, oh, man, you know.
Wow.
What happens to our heart rate and blood pressure elevated, right? We're ready to run from something or fight something, not love something.
I think that's so powerful for us to think as Christians, what is our response? As Christians, what is our response? To sit around and stew when you said fear is just supposed to be a momentary emotion to deal with the immediate threat versus hanging on to it or living our lives in fear, living our lives out in anger. We've got to be done with that if we want love, is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, and admit, I mean, it's such a relief to admit that we can't control other people because that burden goes away, you know, or that that is in God's hands, that I don't control the universe, right? I can do a little bit. I can maybe have some influence over me and try to walk this path and perfectly and go get into home groups and get people around me and take care of myself and put God first, do that first and most important commandment.
Do you guys know the first commandment of the Ten Commandments? You shall have no other gods before me. Let's look at the next verse, verse 19. We love because he first loved us. In a way, our reactions to everything going on in the world, could that be trumped by this verse? That our reaction to the fact that we are so loved by God. And that word that jumped out at me when we said in that first verse, so we know and we rely on the love God has for us. Are you living like you're relying on the love God has for us? Do you live that way? Or do you kind of live in this fear, oh, I don't know if he really has love for me. I don't know if he really has love for me.
Yeah, even me?
Yeah.
I mean, when I repented, I mean, I did have that humble feeling for a long time of, I can't believe me. We all probably think we're worse than anybody else ever. We're hard on ourselves, a lot of us at least. And I think that it's because of this, in this way. The people I see who really don't take care of themselves, who really hate themselves. Sometimes they cut themselves. Sometimes they're tired of living. They just don't like being them. They're loving themselves oftentimes the way that they were loved by their parents, and they treat themselves. So if their parents were really, really punitive and severe to them, if they just made a little kid mistake even, and then it just blows up, they learn to fear making mistakes in themselves. Mm. Our earthly fathers and parents are sort of models for how these folks relate to God sometimes.
Man, we got a big job.
Yeah.
We need a lot of help.
And we have a lot of responsibility too, don't we?
Let's look at the next verse. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he's a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen. Let's take the next one as well. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother. It seems like there's so much hatred today, and you're telling me I can't control that out there and all the stuff you see on all the news media. But are you saying if there's something I hate, if I hate my brother, I can't say I love God?
Well, I don't say it. I'm just trying to do it.
So much of what we fear being judged. Here's one thing that Marty and I in our conversation, he said, have you ever seen sin go unpunished? And I was like, well, what about people in just a really nice house and really comfortable life and they're not bothered by anybody else? I suppose that's sin, isn't it? Of selfishness or materialism. You know, holding things higher than people.
There's an assumption there, too, though, that you're making, I think. You're assuming that that's good in and of itself, right? You know, the kids who put needles in their arms and use heroin, Couple things I'll say about that. First of all, they say when they describe the feeling, it's the first time they felt something that feels like what we feel when we feel love. That calm, taken care of, everything's right in my life. I want what I have kind of feeling. I'm satisfied. I'm comfortable. Mm. That's what that gives them, because, and they hadn't felt that before. So boom, they have an injury and they're like, oh, I haven't felt that before. This is good. I'm gonna keep. And then they become addicted. The second thing I'd say about that is the kids say this: my parents bought me things. My parents bought me things. That wasn't what they wanted, right? We get tired of things, and then we got to move on to the next things. Isn't it better to live the way that it was preached to us, that we want what we have, that we just want, and that's called gratitude. Gratitude is when, instead of looking at what we don't have and take it, because we can control our attention somewhat, right? And we can get better at controlling it too. Why am I not taking my attention and looking for the good? Because if we had to find five or six things right now, just right now, not in our imagination, but right now, that are bad, try to do it fast. It takes some work. I mean, this, I just put myself, exposed myself, didn't I? Because you can say this talk, but.
No, it's right.
Right? Now look for the good. All the things that could go wrong. What's the opposite of gratitude? Have you thought about that? You know, I think it is. I think it's entitlement, that we're owed something more than what we have. And fact of the matter is, I'm not owed anything. I'm not owed grace. I'm not owed forgiveness. I didn't even have to be made, right? Mm. I was given four children, and God took one. Am I gonna complain? He didn't have to give me any, right? So we train ourselves that way, to look for the good, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then accept it too, wow. Right? Because that's the tough one. If you don't like yourself, you don't accept it, and you don't accept forgiveness, and you don't accept grace, and you want to keep punishing yourself. Mom and Dad did it. Now they're gone, but I took over. Now I'm doing it to me. Mm.
Let's look at the next verse. Everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone who loves the Father loves his child as well. How is that helpful psychologically? As you, 4 years ago, you came to me.
Yeah. Okay, I think he comes to us all in different ways, and I was like hyper intellectual because I've been overeducated, you know, and thought I knew more than I did, and so for me it was like a real emotional thing, and then I saw it everywhere because I felt it. I felt a supernatural love, like what Tom said last week about agape. I never felt that before. It was always a quid pro quo involved, like a this for that type of thing. If I was good, I would get loved and things like that, but just to feel it, and you can, and see the face of God in strangers and feel connected, and it gave me a peace, which is a real feeling of safety. What you're describing right now is people don't feel safe. Hmm. We're always taken care of. Really. I mean, look back at all the things you're worried about. We're always taken care of. What's the worst that can happen to me? Go meet them? Go be with them? What's going to happen to me?
Right? You mean when you die?
Yeah, well, I mean, God's, that's probably the worst thing that people fear. God is like, how do I stay alive? But, you know, I'm not saying, yeah, I mean, it's in his hands. I don't have to control the universe. And who am I anyway? I'm small. I can't do anything about these big problems because it's hard enough for me to walk the path. I have to concentrate every day, read, be around my groups. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it's beautiful work. Don't get me wrong. It's like when you first start exercising, you're not good at it, and if you get out of shape and whatever. But you practice it, and after a while, you start looking forward to it because you start getting that reinforcement hit mm-hmm. from it, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how this is. The gospel, like we were talking about, is good at the beginning because it gives you all this relief. I don't have to pretend anymore. I can just accept myself. I'm not perfect. Boy, that's a relief to not have to front that anymore, right? And you get to be around some great people who are, at least we're trying. You know what I mean? We're not like perfect, but at least we're trying. Not everybody's doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's good in the beginning. It's good in the middle because it does keep getting better. Some people said you're on a pink cloud, Marty. You're going to, this will pass, enjoy it. Just gets better by practice as well as I can. And I'm not holding myself up as a model. Don't, you know, do what you do. I'm not perfect at all. I had a resentment come back the other day I didn't know was there. Just jogged it. But I thank God for that. Thank you. I get to work on that. I did not know that was there. You showed it to me. And it's going to be good at the end.
That's powerful.
So do what he says, and it's like it's like toothpaste. No one disputes that it works for most of us, right? But if you don't use it,
you got to pick it up.
Yeah.
One thing that Marty did do early on is he voraciously read the Bible or listened to it. You know, you can pick any different accent, male or female or language, and you can listen to it while you're doing stuff. He voraciously did that. He would watch YouTube clips.
Still do.
He still does.
I try to start my day with God and end my day with God. And the more I get into it, the further I see that I have to go. Because I don't even know how far this thing goes. Uh-huh. How much can you love? How much can you forgive? How much can you, you know? He was the path demonstrated. The more I read about him and the more I think about him, the more I see this, his kingdom is an upside down kingdom, right? It's the opposite of what the world tells us we should be doing, right? It says forgive and love your enemies. That's radical. You know how hard that is when someone hurts us? Because we're so definitely very arrogant.
But psychologically, you're saying that is the best thing that we could do for our
health. It puts us at peace. And also, it tells us some truth. One thing about Christ...
It doesn't make me a wimp?
No. No, it's made because that takes a lot of strength to do that. Little kids want revenge. That's not fair. That's one of the first things you hear is, that's not fair, and that's mine, and selfish. It takes a lot of strength and a lot of faith. Faith is confidence. I made the decision. I'm just doing it. I was too intellectual. I overthought things too much. If you say, do not be afraid and do not let your heart be troubled, I'm just going to do it. I'll pray for help. I've had to pray because, you know, everybody, we hurt people and people hurt us, right? And I had to pray and pray. It took years to forgive some people. But everything that I forgave them for, I had done before in some measure. Right?
I want to go to this final verse and then something for us to practice or try this week. And then we're going to wrap up. Next verse. This is love for God, to obey his commands. And his commands are not burdensome, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world? Only he or she who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. One of the things that you have reminded me several times when I've come to you and had a hard time is you said, where in the Bible does it say... do not fear. I counted, thinking about perfect love casting out fear, it's like 200 times if you look up the word afraid, if you look up the word fear. 200 times Scripture says, do not fear. And you spanked me down one time when you're like, okay, if it says do not fear, why are you fearing? That's obeying his commands.
So would you say fear separates us from God? That's what we're reading here. God is love. There's no fear in love. Anything that separates us from God, we have to turn away from.
What if I let go of fear? What if I live that way?
Is it possible?
I believe it is.
We're supposed to be afraid for just a few, remember this, for seconds maybe. Sometimes longer, but usually not. And the last time you're afraid is when you need to protect yourself or defend something, right? For anger. How much of that do we really need? If the cost of that is to be separated from God, if that's the price that we pay for that, how do we combat it, though? Easier said than done, isn't it? We have faith, and faith is confidence. We're always taken care of by him.
That's awesome.
The things that I feared the most, like, oh my gosh, I lost this. The three big ones, and I've thought about this a lot, thank God I didn't get my way with those things. My whole life changed for the better because of that. If I had gotten what I wanted out of that, it'd be a disaster, right? So usually, I don't know if, when I don't like something, I don't know if it's the worst thing that happened to me or the best thing that happened to me. I don't know. That, I may not know for years. All I can do is be still, like what the psalm that you read, just be still. And just say, okay, in your hands. This is in your hands.
Imagine this week, if you could practice that, when you feel the fear, when you feel the anger, think this is a temporary emotion, what is it God's needing me to do? Well, maybe it's reach out and help that person, or pick that thing up, or make the phone call, or realize I've got to forgive that person if we're going to move ahead. But imagine this many people living without fear. I don't think we'll miss it if we get there under God's strength. Marty, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's so good.
Would you stand? As you go from here, may you go in love. May you not miss the fear any longer. May you realize God's strength and His love for you and for our whole world can be relied upon. You can lean fully on it, and you can invite other people to the peace that He brings. Do that as you go in a way that is winsome and contagious, that others would know the good news of Jesus Christ. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen.